Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea. Welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the Capitol, behind enemy lines in liberal-occupied territory, Olympia, Washington. Brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we do the hard work to implement freedom. But we got to remember our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we got to move from prayer, which we were doing quite a bit. We got to still pray, but we got to move to action. And as Exodus 15:3 says, the Lord is a warrior, the Lord is his name. Are we warriors? That's the question for all of us today. We've got an opportunity of a lifetime, got an opportunity of a generation. Are we warriors? Well, if we're going to see a rebirth of freedom, it's going to take people at the local level. One of those people is joining me today, and that's Representative David Taylor from the 15th Legislative District, who has made, I think, more strides on some of the key issues of our time just by your sheer determination and will than anybody I know in Olympia.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, when you have the tenacity of a Wolverine, I guess it finally pays off on occasion. Or a Badger. I mean, take your pick. No, you know what? In all seriousness, politics is a team sport, whether anybody actually wants to acknowledge it or not. And you know, I look at everything that you've done, that I've been able to accomplish, and I would note two things of importance with those, all of that. And one is, none of that happens but for the grace of God. And number two, I couldn't do what I do here without the support from you, Representative Young, Representative Vols. We've got a great team here, and as I said, it's a team sport, so we're looking good.
Well, we're gonna start off with a few things. We'll start off on the news first and the international front, because, you know, while I don't normally do a daily intelligence briefing when we're having this stuff in Olympia, there's some things that are on the news right now that we just need to talk about. And one of them, I think this has encouraged people across the world, but it's particularly encouraged those who believe in the 51st state movement. The British Supreme Court came out and said, yes, the Parliament must vote on Brexit. And actually, it's a step forward toward Brexit, because the Parliament actually is very likely going to vote to initiate Brexit under Article 50. What are your thoughts on that? Especially, how does it apply to us?
Well, I guess as it applies to us, as you've said, I've heard you say, I've said it, you know, give us the opportunity to at least have a vote. And that was really the first step in the Brexit plan, is they put it to a public vote. The public voted for it. Now the courts ruled that Parliament has to act on it. Frankly, it follows the same exact steps that we've outlined in the 51st state bill. Put it to a vote. If it passes, then we begin the process of going through Congress to get their vote and ultimately the establishment of a 51st state. And I think it's a positive step. I think people are returning in a lot of ways to their roots of self-determination and self-governance. And that's a real, for us in Eastern Washington, that would be a very positive step forward.
So I saw a joke on social media today that said, somebody asked a former Navy SEAL what they thought of General Mattis. And they said, well, let me put it this way. He's got a bear rug in his living room, only it's alive. It's just too afraid to move, right? I thought that was in the news now. 99, okay? Three, folks, understand what this means. 3 days, okay? 99 bombing runs against ISIS in the first 3 days, massive casualties of ISIS, and it kind of makes you wonder if we didn't know where their strongholds were all along.
Well, you have to wonder. I mean, 3 days in office, and he's able to go out and get, essentially order 99 raids. It begs the question. Let's just assume that everything's on the up and up, and we had no idea where they were prior to the new administration. It begs the question: what was our Secretary of Defense, and what was our military leaders? I don't want to say military leaders. Let me back that off a little bit. The former administration, they were simply inept at actually finding anybody, apparently, unless they were looking for you and I, and then they just used the NSA to find us. But apparently that doesn't work with ISIS. So,
right. Yeah, they can track down ranchers in Oregon, right? I mean, you know, ranchers that protest in Oregon, really easy to track down. But, boy, ISIS, you know, it's pretty tough.
It's tough.
And stuff, even though they're in a very small area of the world anyway.
Right.
Well, this moves us to Israel. Okay, we have a bill that has received a ton of support, bipartisan support, and there are well over 25 members on that bill at the last count, condemning the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions movement, which is, for those of you that don't know what that is, the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions against Israel. Trump is kind of setting, I mean, this has been pretty amazing. Trump is following through on his campaign promise, and they've already begun talks to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Now, this is after 1995, U.S. Congress passed a bill that recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So he's actually just coming into compliance with U.S. law. What are your thoughts on that? And then we have this BDS bill that's received so much support. Well, what do you think is happening?
Well, I guess let me just go to the BDS bill specifically. And so much happens in Olympia. Folks that listen to my show know and have heard me say Olympia is a media black hole. The only thing that people at home get to hear about is stuff the media deems newsworthy, which is what makes this show, my show, so important to let people at home know what's actually happening. You will never say this over the air. You're humble, Matt, and it's one of the reasons that I love you like a brother. This, the bill, the House Joint Memorial that is now has now been introduced has so much support because of the work that you did. And I think it's important for folks at home to know that, you know, the original resolution was put out there, it gets introduced, and suddenly there are Democrats running to you saying, we missed it on the intro sheet, we would have pink slipped it, can you introduce a new resolution, change something so it's different? And we want to sign on, not only sign on, but to put forth their own a letter to the governor that took language from your resolution, and out for everybody to sign. I don't know how many people signed on to that. We've got a whole bunch of people now signed on to the House Joint Memorial. That is because of the work you did, and I think it is incredibly refreshing that we've seen really the politics removed from the issue, at least by the legislature, bipartisan people that you would never expect, honestly, I'd never expect in support of Israel. It's a positive development. I think it sets the stage for things we will see all over this country. And honestly, President Trump is leading the way with his actions in Washington, D.C.
He really is. And I really like the fact that for the first time, now, folks, a lot of people don't know, but the governor's office of Washington and then the city of Olympia have been the most anti-Israel places and positions in almost the entire country. So when the Democrats actually sent a letter to their own a governor of their own party and then sat down apparently yesterday with the governor to educate him on this issue, it is an enormous step forward for Washington State. It's huge.
There's no doubt about it. And again, you're humble. You won't accept any responsibility for that. But I firmly believe, Matt, that you played an integral role in getting that move forward in a bipartisan way, and ultimately indirectly led to the several Democrats meeting with the Democrat governor of Washington State to educate him on what the real issues are.
And you know, we talk about trade, and one of the things is that we're going to be expanding trade. But like you said, it takes a team. It really does take a team. The other part of this, though, that we don't talk about is on the terrorist front. Okay, and Trump had a phone call with al-Sisi in Egypt. He's president of Egypt, was a former army general there, and is rebuilding the relationship with Egypt to fight terrorism. Now, Egypt used to be one of our big allies to fight terrorism. Then the Muslim Brotherhood took over. The Obama administration supported it. Then the Egyptian government tossed out the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi. And now Trump is recognizing, hey, why did we do that? That doesn't even make sense. Do you think, I mean, we talk about the Muslim Brotherhood in kind of that overseas sense. Do you think we actually have a shot maybe this year of addressing that issue here in Washington based on the climate that you're seeing?
Well, there's always the potential for that. Unfortunately, I mean, you mentioned it with the city of Olympia and our governor. They preach tolerance until it doesn't fit the agenda, and I think that the entire The support of Israel, HJR, and letter to the governor is a positive step forward. But the next step then is to look at known terrorist organizations. And my fear there is that tolerance will become the norm again, and it will be politically incorrect to call out those organizations and be very clear in who they are and what they support. I remain hopeful. I mean, on one hand, but on the other, I've been here long enough to see it go sideways really quick. So it's worth the conversation, and if we can get the ball moving, if nothing else, to educate the folks across the aisle, then that's what we'll do. But you know, we'll see what happens.
So that moves us to the national front. Congress passes a bill to defund Planned Parenthood. And Dave, you've been leading on this issue for years. You've been able to work tirelessly to finally get us within two votes of defunding abortion in Washington state. The Trump administration obviously is going to sign something like that based on all indications, at least right now. Washington started this whole thing, legalizing abortion before Roe versus Wade. I mean, do you think we can actually do this? A lot of people asked at the rally. We had the March for Life rally, for those who didn't know, yesterday. Over 5,000 people showed up in Olympia on the steps. But a lot of people asked, hey, can we actually do this in Washington?
Well, the answer is yes, we can do this in Washington. It takes courage and it takes leadership to do it. And as long as I'm sitting in the House of Representatives representing the 15th District, it's going to be a continued push on my part to see the defunding of Planned Parenthood and the ending of publicly funding of abortions. You know, you mentioned the bill before Congress. You know, I think it's worth noting, one of the very first executive orders that the president signed upon getting into office was ending the international support or money going to international Planned Parenthood. I mean, we're talking $400 million going to organizations overseas that promote abortion. One of his first, if not the first action he took, was to end that. Here in Washington state, you know, it continues to be a point of education, telling people what the truth is. Matt, you and I both, former Representative Overstreet, I know he's been in the same boat. We've been called liars. We've been marginalized. We've been told that we've inflated numbers. You name it. People have suggested that we are part of disinformation or fake news with regard to Planned Parenthood and abortion numbers in Washington. 2016, we got the updated numbers. There were over 10,600 publicly funded abortions in Washington state using state taxpayer dollars to the tune of $6.2 million. That's just for 2016. And if you look at those numbers over the course of the last 7 years, from 2010 to 2016, in total, state and federal money, Planned Parenthood in Washington state has received over $204 million. Those are the facts. They are undeniable. The numbers come directly from the healthcare authority and the Department of Health. It's those numbers that we have to continue to get out there publicly to educate the folks at home that these are the real numbers. Do not fall into the trap of, well, but federal law prohibits the public funding of abortions. You're right. The Hyde Amendment is very clear, except for in the case of life of the mother or rape and incest. It prohibits the federal dollars being used to publicly fund abortions. That ignores the state dollars. And last year alone, it was $6.2 million.
Now, Dave Taylor, we have been criticized for not caring about women's health. Now, I want to preface this. This is, folks, things are happening so fast, and it is the vindication that is happening can be missed. But today, undercover video comes out. Planned Parenthood in Arizona admits, quote, we don't offer prenatal care, end quote. And yet the head of Planned Parenthood, Cecil Richards, she says, oh, this is integral to women's health. So who really cares about women's health?
Well, for the record, Matt, I love women. I love my wife. I love my daughter. I love my mother. I love my grandmother. Love my aunts. Really, and I love your wife. She's a wonderful lady. It's smoke and mirrors, man. I don't know how else to put it. If the taxpayers of Washington want us to spend $6.2 million for women's health, then let's do it. $6.2 million in 2016 did not go to women's health. It went to publicly fund abortions, to use public dollars to end the life of over 10,600 unborn children. Period. End of story. I'm more than happy to divert that money for women's health. But the fact of the matter is, Planned Parenthood has nothing to do with women's health. It has absolutely everything to do with being a political organization, make no mistake about it, that is in the business to end life.
Unbelievable. All this is happening at one time, and I love it. I mean, this is the time, folks, this is the time we were made for. The Lord put us in this time to make stuff happen, and he is literally laying the foundation. He is setting the path for us to walk down. We just have to walk down it, which brings me to the next thing, Trump. So aside from the fact of mentioning God unashamedly in his inaugural speech, Trump also said, quote, "When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice," end quote. One of the greatest statements, I think, of the last 20 years, totally putting to bed this ridiculous notion that if you believe in the Constitution, that it means what it says. If you believe in the Bible and it means what it says, that you're somehow a racist and a bigot and you hate little babies and children and puppies and flowers.
Let's see. How did former President Obama? It was I don't remember the specific reference now. Hey, look, just
your Bibles and your guns.
Your Bibles and your guns. Yeah. Well, I've got both, so that's all right. You know, whether you like him or not, whether you supported President Trump or not, at this point is irrelevant. If there's nothing else, you have to respect the man. Number one, he's keeping his campaign promises. Number two, he is on the front lines in support of the Second Amendment. And number three, he is unafraid to declare God in public. He's unafraid of it. And I respect that out of this president. He is out there. You may not agree with him and you may not like his methods, but boy, you've got to admire his tenacity.
Yeah, I mean, he's blowing up political correctness.
Absolutely.
It's great. I mean, it is freeing and liberating for us as Americans to see political correctness completely shattered.
It's exactly what the people want. I've had more Democrats, more liberals come to me and go, "There's absolutely nothing I agree with you on, but I respect the fact that you'll take a hard stand." I'll take it. I will take that compliment and run with it all day long. That's all people want. They want honesty from their elected officials, and they want people to stand for their principles. That's the expectation, and unfortunately, it doesn't happen very often. It is not out there. I mean, we sit here in Olympia, and we watch it day after day after day after day, and you'll see people who sign on to bills who say, "Well, I'm only doing it as a courtesy because, you know, I'm the ranking or the chair and the governor. It's a governor's bill." I'm sorry. If you put your name on it, then you support it. In one form or another, you do, in fact, support it. And it's in bad taste to sign something that you're then going to say you don't actually support.
And we're going to come back to that on the budget specifically because it's going to shock a lot of people on some of the things that are happening down here. I do want to mention one other quote from Trump. Now, David, we don't have the opportunity at the state level to talk about foreign policy much, but when we have, we support a non-interventionist foreign policy. Donald Trump says this, and this completely changes the direction of the last 50 years in the United States. "The right of all nations to put their own interests first." We now, as the United States, respect that. I mean, I don't know why it took that long to do it, but that's a dramatic and fundamental shift that we're not leading with the barrel of a gun. We're leading with our businesses and our missionaries and allowing other countries like Israel, for example, to make their own decisions about their own defense. They don't have to come check with the U.S. to make sure that they have the ability to defend themselves.
Well, it's a huge step forward. And frankly, I believe personally that it's going to lead to better foreign relations overall. You know, when you sit down and talk to another leader of a country from the standpoint of how can we be partners in economic development? How can your economic activity be of benefit to my country? How and vice versa? How can my country's economic activity be of benefit to yours? Instead of suddenly, you know, the threat being, you know, if you don't join us, if you stand against us, we're suddenly going to drop in 30,000 troops, tanks, and anti-aircraft weapons. It's a completely different mindset, and it's going to lead to better foreign relations overall. In fact, I fully expect it's going to take some time, but I fully expect the overall relationship between the U.S. and countries in South America and countries in Asia, countries even in Eastern Europe, to benefit from this. We will see, I think, incredible economic growth worldwide. And if you follow my show at all, you know, Jason and I, we talk about the economic conditions, not only in the U.S., but the economic trends worldwide, and they're not good. They've been horrible over the past several months, over a year specifically. This can rebound worldwide into economic prosperity, and guess what happens? That means there's less foreign aid going out, less U.S. tax dollars aid going overseas that can be invested in domestic infrastructure and ultimately lead to more job creation and better lives for United States citizens.
So let that perfect dovetail into trade. TPP is now dead. NAFTA is going to be renegotiated. Union leaders came out praising. Now, hang on. These are the guys that supported Hillary Clinton, praising Donald Trump for doing the right thing. Now, Hillary Clinton would have done this. And this is a message to all union members and all working class folks and people that are in the rural parts of America. Trump was the one that actually stopped these destructive trade deals that were sending our jobs overseas to China or sending them down to Mexico. He did it. Here's the interesting part about it. The Olympian this morning, okay? Another example of fake news says, quote, that there are, now this is interesting, it's a 12-nation deal, they admit that. They admit that this deal would have governed 40% of the world's economy. They actually said it in the article, okay? But then they say, Washington State's going to lose a bunch of jobs because of this. What is your response to that?
My response to that is very simple. Washington State, any jobs that Washington State lose will be a direct result of the incredibly arcane economic and environmental policies adopted by the House Democrat majority and signed by the governor of Washington State, and will have nothing to do with TPP. Because guess what? Innovation will always trump, no pun intended, these regulations. The TTP was going to be an absolute horribly devastating agreement for all sorts of people, union, non-union, farmers, etc. It's gone. We're out of it. NAFTA is going to get renegotiated. That's going to lead to more job growth and all across the country, and I think job growth right here in Washington. But you cannot eliminate the fact that in Washington State, we're governed by the Democrat majority in the House, a very slim minority in the Senate, and then a Democrat governor. Their 25-plus year control of this state has, in fact, led to the economic deterioration all across the state, be it rural Washington or urban Washington. We can no longer simply rely on companies like Boeing to be the epicenter for all of our economic activity. We can't do it. I think we have opportunities now through the leadership of President Trump, as well as leadership within the House Republican Minority Caucus, to actually put forward things that will see economic growth. And hopefully, through the leadership at the national level, we're going to see some of those come to fruition and lead to, I think, great job growth here in Washington.
So we have one of the it is the largest industrial area between Seattle and Minneapolis in Spokane Valley, Washington. Half of it, actually over half of it, is undeveloped at this point. And I think we have the opportunity to make our state more than Boeing, more than Microsoft, but actually about other manufacturing, and return that decentralization. So we're not relying on one side of the state, you know, for all of what they're saying, you know, for jobs and opportunities and everything.
Rural socialism, as they like to call it.
Yeah, we can actually have it in the rural part of Washington.
Isn't that a novel concept that rural Washington wants to be able to have jobs and their kids to have not have to leave the communities they grew up in to find a job. You don't have to look any further than the 1990 passage of the Growth Management Act, which was an economic killer for rural Washington. You talk about industrial growth in the Spokane Valley. Yeah, there's an opportunity to do that, but guess what? There's all sorts of laws in the way of that. We've got an out of control Supreme Court that makes up environmental law whenever it deems necessary. That's destroying the ability to build businesses in rural Washington. You've got the Department of Ecology who continuously wants to go beyond the minimum federal standards in laws like the Clean Water Act or the Clean Air Act that leads to job destroying policies. There has to be a turnaround, and like it or not, at this point in time, it has to come, at least some direction has to come at the national level. And if you look at the folks that are rallying around President Trump right now, who may be in positions of promoting economic prosperity in rural America, I see it as a shining light that good things are to come. We just have to be here to help them.
So we have a couple other things that are very interesting going on right now with Donald Trump. White House website makes it English only. We'll say that again, makes it English only. Removes all mentions of climate change on the whitehouse.gov website. Now, here's the interesting part. We were just lectured, was it yesterday?
It was yesterday.
That the science is settled and can be compared to tobacco causes lung cancer. It is that settled. Clearly not. Just an outright lie by this person. Now, they went through their whole curriculum vitae. But the fact of the matter is, honestly, I think a lot of people are saying, yeah, this is nonsense. We just need to dispense with it. What is your take on Trump's direction and also on the direction of the climate change movement here in Washington State, which is kind of going against the will of the people in America?
Well, I've always said that let's assume that the climate alarmists are correct. I've got a whole bunch of constituents that would like to grow Florida citrus in the Moxie Valley. But that said, it's absolutely ridiculous. Eastern Washington this year would be tough to find somebody that would say, yeah, we are definitely experiencing global warming or climate change. Because as most people have noticed, the narrative has now shifted from global warming to, in fact, climate change because, well, apparently they don't understand that climate is, in fact, cyclical. But it's a weird dynamic when you watch at the federal level complete, I guess, 180 is probably the best term for it with regard to climate change. And I think a direction coming from the president that says we're going to end this nonsense and then look at what Washington's doing with, I believe it's House Bill 1144 that says we're going to actually go way beyond any of the current goals that were established in previous legislation. And we want to get a 10% reduction of below 1990 levels.
Yes. Now, to put this into perspective, that would be in accordance with Cuba and Uzbekistan.
Right.
Okay.
Well, why not? I mean, what could go wrong?
Right. I mean, it would be the same level. I mean, you're just kind of shaking your head. I mean, we hear some of this stuff, and it really is. And they're dead serious about this. But here's the interesting part. We brought up a couple of issues, and we have a bill, actually, we're going to be dropping a bunch of bills tomorrow morning that support the direction of the country under President Trump, especially on the whole issue of global warming and also on Obamacare. But we had a couple bills and a couple ideas that came forward in regards to forest management and to hydropower being actually considered a renewable resource, which we all know it is, but under Washington law, it's not. And so when they brought these goals forward, we just asked a simple question, hey, would you agree that these would help you meet your target goals? And it was kind of funny because I don't think they expected that, which is a little weird to me.
Right.
They didn't know what to say.
Well, they backpedaled immediately and said, well, you know, we're really limited now in hydropower. We've really maxed out our ability to create hydropower. And somebody, I don't remember if it was somebody on the committee or another speaker, said, no, actually, we haven't. We have the ability. Oh, it was a lobbyist for one of the organizations. No, we actually have the ability to expand hydropower in Washington State with low-impact new hydropower. We can actually have cheaper power than virtually anywhere else in the country, which will, well, guess what, drive economic growth. Because businesses, that's one of the main cost factors when citing a business. How much is will our utility be at the end of the year? You have cheap power, it's really easy to bring business in. And there's, you look at Grant County and the fact that they have cheap power, go to Quincy and look at the economic development that has happened there. It's absolutely amazing. They have all sorts of server farms. They're not, it hasn't created a whole lot of, in terms of jobs. There's definitely some job creation. But what it's done is it's created an economic base by which to build other businesses around it. It's been a huge boon there. And Grant County itself, which has always been a rural agricultural district, is looking pretty good financially, especially considering the overall economic downturn all across the country.
So that brings us to Obamacare. Okay, we have a bill that would repeal Obamacare in Washington State. Clearly, Trump has signaled he's going to begin dismantling Obamacare with one of his first executive orders. And folks, understand, people were criticizing him because it's vague, because it said, you know, you need to do what you can to ease the burden of Obamacare, speaking to the government agencies that he's in control of. But what that actually does, it actually sets up people, bureaucrats particularly, to be fired for not helping to ease the burden of Obamacare and not taking affirmative steps to do so. It's actually a very smart human resources move. And a lot of people don't understand that bureaucrats, when they're hired, have to be fired only for cause, unless you're one of the higher level political appointees in the bureaucratic system of the federal government. What's your take on the Obamacare direction, and what do you think we can actually do here in Washington State to push back on some of this stuff?
Well, we need to pass the bill that it would be supportive of repealing Obamacare. You know, overall, nationally, I think you're 100% right. It was a great move by the president to essentially preemptively set up the process by which, hey, if you're not going to fall in line, if you're not going to follow my directive as the president of the United States, then we're going to find somebody who will. Here's my concern. I sit on appropriations. You know, I get to see the circus that is every single day. Look at the way the appropriations, for your listeners, is the budget committee. We deal with the operating budget. One of my largest concerns this year with the budget is going to be healthcare. And if Congress is successful in repealing Obamacare, and there's no doubt that President Trump would go ahead and sign that bill, I believe that at least in the House, there'd be a move to take on the entire system that has been built here in Washington State and fund it with state taxpayer dollars. We are talking billions and billions of dollars that would have to be somehow magically created in Washington State, because, sorry, the taxpayers are tapped out. But there will be a move, at least by some here in Olympia, to recreate that program at the state level.
Some form of it, yeah, yep. Socialized medicine. And that's why we have to be ever vigilant. We just have to be. Trump did something phenomenal, hiring freeze. It gets back to the fact that when you have a hiring freeze, these bureaucrats that are retiring, those positions then aren't filled. So there's only a couple ways that you can reduce bureaucracy physically through the human resources process. And one is to stop the hiring of bureaucrats. The second is to actually eliminate the positions in the budget. And it looks like he's starting, at least putting a cap on things right now. Don't you wish we could do that here in Washington?
Boy, don't I wish we could do that here in Washington. One of the most frustrating things of the state's budget is the lack of detail. You know, we all look at the budget when we finally get it after sometimes months of special session and backdoor negotiations. And we get a copy of a budget that is still warm to the touch from the copy machine, and we're expected to vote on it. Well, yeah, I sit on appropriations, and so I think the public has this expectation that somehow I'm magically, I have the ability to see everything that's in it behind the scenes and get better detail than everybody else, and that's just inaccurate. We budget in this state in a, best described as lump sums. So think of it in your own household budget, and you do a budget that's very detailed that says, okay, for outdoor maintenance. Here's our budget. Here's our home, but home inside the home maintenance budget and cleaning supplies and everything else. Well, and that makes great sense. Actually, you're able to see what it's going to cost, the fuel for your lawnmower, the new lawnmower, maybe, you know, whatever. At the state level, it's just all under home maintenance, and it's a lump sum of X million or billion dollars for, guess what, home maintenance. It makes absolutely no sense. And when you start digging in and you start asking the questions, there's no answers to them. Well, how much are we spending in filing cabinets for the Department of Ecology? Well, it depends on the individual program and how large that program is and the new reporting requirements. And we don't actually budget to that detail, Representative, because if we did, it would be minutia. Nobody would really understand it. Nobody really cares. So we'll have to get back to you on it.
But it's my job to care, right?
Yeah, it is incredibly frustrating. And to get back to your direct question of wouldn't it be great here in Washington, we know for a fact that the Department of Ecology, for example, has delegated authority under programs like the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. Their delegated authority has resulted in rules that go above and beyond the minimum federal standards. I'm of the opinion that we can eliminate the delegated authority. We can eliminate those jobs within the Department of Ecology related to air quality compliance, water quality compliance, and simply rely on EPA to do the work. We've created a duplicative system that is absolutely 100% unnecessary.
No question about it. Now, I'm going to shift gears a little bit at the national level. Tom Tancredo came out with this report, conclusively proving massive indoctrination at our colleges. I am so shocked.
Yeah, that's really not breaking news.
Yeah, but now there's a scientific study behind it, right? I guess. I don't know.
We can cite it now, at least.
Yeah, we can cite it. But that should tell everybody listening to this show, we got a lot of work to do, because literally, when at least what happened to me, when I found out I'd been lied to, I was so mad about it. But somebody had to actually take the time to teach me on the principles of our country, show me the primary source documents, so I wasn't going down this road of socialism utopia that just, it's just not true. It's just based on lies.
I had the opportunity to have a telephone call with a seventh grade class last week, and the teacher asked about, you know, the presidential election and who I supported. And he said in his class that it was an interesting breakdown, that there were a few kids that supported Trump, there was a few that supported Hillary, but overall the vast majority supported Bernie Sanders. And when he said that, this classroom of seventh graders began cheering. If there is no better example of the indoctrination that has occurred not only in our schools, but through mainstream media, it's that. There's no better example than that. Seventh graders who really have no understanding of politics or even the founding of this country were supportive of Bernie Sanders. Now, a side note on that, at one point they asked about water law, which, Matt, you know, is an issue that I'm passionate about, and you can't answer in 5 minutes or less. It's too complicated. So I simply said, hey, I'm sure your seventh graders, you know Mark Twain. Silence. Okay, you know, Huckleberry Finn, Mark Twain, Tom Sawyer maybe? Nothing. They never heard of him. I think we've identified a problem. Seventh graders in Washington State don't know who Mark Twain is.
And the awkward long pause of, how can that be possible? That was required reading when I was in grade school.
Yeah.
Grade school, not middle school.
And tested on it as a sixth grader. Reading Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, and Tom Sawyer, and being tested on it by the teacher, making sure you understood, you had reading comprehension of what you just read. Apparently, it's no longer used in schools, which would probably mean that Common Core doesn't recognize Mark Twain as a legitimate author.
Indeed. Indeed. Breaking news right now. Trump is going to be signing executive orders tomorrow restricting immigration from Syria. We've talked about this quite a bit. It's about time, right?
Oh, no doubt about it. No. And honestly, I don't necessarily even want to pick Syria out. Let's look at any countries that had a history of exporting terrorism. They should be on that list. They should be included in the executive order. We're not saying that citizens of those countries can't come in, can't immigrate to the United States, but whether it's popular or not, go through a check. Let's prove up who you are, what your background is, and that you do not have bad intentions towards this country.
So Trump is going to do so, and this is just coming up right now. Six countries, let's see, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. So seven total countries, six in addition to Syria.
He must have been listening to your show.
Must have been listening to you, brother. All right, let's move next to the regional front. A lot of bills out there. I want to talk about a couple in particular. Let's talk about the budget and some of the stuff that's being introduced and taxes. I mean, billions of dollars of taxes being introduced in regards to the budget to solve education issues. And then also, let's talk about water law as well. Everybody's been really anticipating, what about the Hearst fix? What about the Hearst fix? What about the Hearst fix? So tell the listeners a little bit about what we're doing on these two issues.
And what about the Hearst fix? Your listeners are well-versed, I'm sure, in the Hearst decision. The short answer is there are a whole bunch of supposed fixes out there. There's a ton of moving parts, and what the final piece looks like is way too early to tell. Whether that incorporates a fix for our rural cities with the Foster decision, or whether it's a standalone fix, too early to tell. We, Matt, you, myself, Representative Vincent Baez from the 42nd District, we've been working together to identify bills that not only address the water aspect of the Hearst decision, but the growth management aspect, and as well as trying to address some of the on-site septic issues that have come out of the Hearst decision, whether counties can have a self-inspection program or not. There's a lot of it out there. I honestly don't know where to begin. I'll give you, I guess, some of the highlights. I'll let you talk about your bill regarding the presumption of validity with regard to adequate water supply. We've got a bill out there, folks. You may not be shocked too much. I wasn't really shocked, but over the last 20 years, there's been $800 million of investment in Washington State, really in the form of salmon recovery, but specifically related to water quality and in-stream flows for as part of salmon recovery. $800 million. I believe that adequately offsets any impact these groundwater withdrawals for individual, known as individual wells for single-family residences, would ever have from an environmental standpoint. We've already offset it. These de minimis withdrawals do not have an impact. The return flows and consumptive use associated with these withdrawals are the return flows are high, and the consumptive use is very, very low. So we've got a bill that simply says, it's been mitigated. Thanks for your opinion, Superior Court or Supreme Court. Go away.
Amen.
A positive start, right?
Right.
Your bill on the presumption of an adequate water supply is certainly a Hearst fix. I'll let you talk about that one.
Well, I mean, so we have this bill that would establish a rebuttable presumption that permit-exempt groundwater withdrawals do not impair in-stream flows. Really fancy, sounds complicated, but it's really not. It's just saying, look, if we and we have more water than we know what to do with in some places of eastern Washington. Now, we do have limited water in some places, but the fact of the matter is, in Kittitas County, for example, we did not have any court finding on the water that was actually there, and all of a sudden a moratorium comes in. This bill would make people, if you're challenging somebody and saying that permit-exempt well is impairing my senior water right, it would force them to go to court to prove it. And the fact of the matter is, it is very difficult to prove a groundwater withdrawal is impacting a surface flow of a river. Only in a few places in the state does the surface flow of the river actually touch the groundwater. And we actually have one of those places in the Spokane River where it goes into the aquifer and the aquifer comes back into the river. This bill just does that, and it would immediately lift the moratorium, and it would actually force some of these radical environmental groups to actually prove their case.
Well, there's no doubt. And the Department of Ecology back in 1999 in the Yakima Basin started doing working with the USGS and prepared a study with regard to surface groundwater interaction. And in that process, they adopted what they call the one molecule rule. So if you have one molecule of water that is 800 feet below the Earth's surface that somehow manages to move up and become connected to the surface water, well, then everything is then connected, not just the one molecule, but every bit of water. That is the basis by which the Hirst decision is founded. It is, in my humble opinion, it's faulty science. I won't argue that shallow wells, shallow aquifers don't have some sort of interaction in some cases with the surface water, but to rule that based on a one molecule rule, that it is all interconnected, it just doesn't fit. It doesn't pass the sniff test. We have opportunities to address that now. Unfortunately, like so many things here in Washington, we can pass this law, and guess what? In about 6 years, we'll have the out-of-control activist Supreme Court making another ruling that we then have to legislatively go in and fix. I'm an advocate for very clear, concise laws with the elimination of rules. Why? Because it is incumbent upon the legislature, as those elected by the public to represent them, to pass laws with sufficient clarity that we don't need rules. If we eliminated that rule writing, if we passed laws that were clear and concise, that did not need to be interpreted, we would, I think, severely hamper the court's ability to create law through their activist decisions.
No question about it. And this moves us next to the budget. We have had this education fight for a long time. We have had a created crisis, House Bill 2261, that we voted against back when we first were in office. We told them at that time, you were setting this entire state up for failure. They did it anyway. And now suddenly the court rules on the definitions created in 2261 that, hey, you haven't fully funded education. And now we have Republicans scrambling around trying to figure out how they're going to pay for it. And, of course, it always ends up being a tax increase as the solution.
Well, thus far, it's been a tax increase as the solution. Let's back up here. Let's talk really about this McCleary decision and is simple in terms as possible. What the court said is 2261 back in 2010.
Yeah.
What that did was by defining basic education, you essentially, legislature, amended the Constitution. You can't amend the Constitution through statutory law. But let's assume for a second that works. They then went on to say, because of the constitutional concrete doctrine, you can now not change the definition of basic education ever again. So we have a bill in 2010 that supposedly amended the Constitution, and now the legislature's barred from amending that bill through subsequent legislation to return it back to the way the Constitution was originally intended. You talk about a circular argument, talk about a wrong rock argument. That's where we're at. That's how we got to where we're at today. Now we have, how do you fund it? And of course, we've got proposals out there, and depending on who you ask, it needs to be $3 billion or more money. Some people say it's five, others say it's nine. So there's all sorts of numbers out there. The fact of the matter is, we have in this state $3 billion of natural revenue growth that can be, through prioritized budgeting, dedicated to K-12 education. If that's the answer, more money is the answer, we have the ability to do it. Nope. Instead, we start seeing tax increases float out there. They're in the House and the Senate. They're identical bills. We've got one tied directly to the capital gains tax. The total on that, folks, over 10 years is $9.4 billion. Let me say that again.
$9.4 billion.
$9.4 billion over 10 years. That is sponsored. The prime sponsor on that bill is a Republican, the chair of the Senate Ways and Means Committee, Senator Braun. Not to be outdone, he also prime sponsored Senate Bill 5113, which is the B&O tax reform, as they like to call it. Well, some reform, because that totals $14.4 billion of new taxes over a 10-year period. So we have a Republican who's now sponsored $23 billion, almost $24 billion in new taxes, all of it's tied, and it's in the title, all tied directly to education. He says he doesn't support it. I'll take him at his word, but the optics on this are horrible. And if I, as a representative from the 15th district, have to answer questions about why Republicans are supporting $24 billion of new taxes, I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to tell them that's the Senate bill. I have no idea why he's sponsoring them. He says it's a courtesy to the governor. I agree it's in poor taste, and I'll be voting no. What else is there to say?
What else is there to say? Except perhaps that we actually have to have a final solution on this education issue that doesn't require raising taxes, but we actually have more than enough money. We just need to figure out how we're going to teach our kids and what is the most effective, and get the heck out of the way of the teachers, get rid of some of the high-stakes testing, and replace that. And you have a couple ideas on that as well.
Absolutely. In fact, your seatmate, Representative Bob McCaslin, myself, Representative Matt Manuler from the 13th District, Representative McEwen from the 35th, we've all been working on various aspects of this. Some of the bills look at delinking the high-stakes testing from the graduation requirements. Other bills are the idea is to expand the use of career and technical education as alternative assessment methods, as alternatives to these high-stake tests. You know, we have a lot of solutions out there, and the fact of the matter is, the best solution that they all have in common is providing greater flexibility to the local school district and letting teachers teach again. Both my parents were teachers. I was raised by teachers. All their friends were teachers, so I kind of had it coming and going. All they want is the freedom. They all became teachers because they love kids and they know how to reach kids. Let's give them the ability to do that.
Amen. And we also have something I want to touch on real quick. Three Washington State senators, Danzel Erickson and now Don Benton. And actually, Danzel came out with apparently there's some sort of a press release or tweet earlier today. They are going to be very high up in the Trump administration, Senator Erickson and Senator Benton in the EPA. It looks like Senator Danzel in the Department of Agriculture, literally helping to lead the draining of the swamp. Quick comment on that.
Well, I hope Senator Danzel, now whatever his title is with Department of Agriculture, and that his
special advisor to the secretary or something, whatever.
Whatever it is. I hope his first announcement is, well, I'd like to introduce you to my new logging czar.
I love it. I love it. Folks, constitutional conservatives in the very highest positions in some of these bureaucracies actually helping to unwind. There is no way. I mean, these are folks from rural Washington, Bellingham and Vancouver and Ferry County that are literally helping to turn the country around. Chance of a lifetime, folks. Be praying for those guys. They're going to be under the gun quite a bit. Pray for them that they would have discernment and wisdom and be able to get through the unwinding of these bureaucracies. Last but not least, this is the 1 year anniversary of the murder of Lavoie Finicum, cowboy down in Oregon. We've been talking about this a little bit already this week. Your quick take on how did it come to that over land use and water rights?
Out of control federal bureaucracy that it does not respect private property rights or Western water law. My hope is that President Donald Trump reins in those agencies and puts an end to this absolute ridiculousness.
Very briefly, Jeanette Finicum was in Spokane Valley on Saturday. She shared the story that the BLM literally is violating their own law and regulation in preventing her from moving her cows to her winter range, even though 2 years after Permitty dies, they can't mess with it. They have 2 years to figure everything out. I mean, I think this is just one of those examples of lawlessness.
There's no doubt. In the Hage case out of Nevada, showed that the BLM has this habit of acting in a conspiratorial manner. I mean, the court decision said so.
Said so, exactly. All right, Dave, real quick, plug for your radio show. How can people get more information about you and contact you?
Well, they can contact me via Facebook. You can listen to the radio show God, Family, and Country if you're in the Yakima area on 9:30 a.m. Saturday mornings at 10:30 or Mondays in Spokane. Monday, I believe, at 12:30 in the afternoon. On that radio show, I think it's 6:30 a.m. 6:30 a.m.
There
it is. So if they can contact me, Facebook, listen to the show. We do everything you're doing, only more.
Hopefully I'll make it on there here soon. But hey, folks. Well, first of all, Dave, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today. And folks, look, it is going to take all of us to implement freedom. It's going to take normal average folks all of a sudden ending up in Washington, D.C., turning this thing around. I want to thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. We're going to be back next week with another update. And I really want to say, remember to do everything you can to defend freedom locally. And that means some of you are going to need to run for office. Pray about that. I mean it. Talk to your family members. There's tons of elected positions, water districts, etc., at the local level. May God bless all of you, and may He truly make this generation the greatest one.